The Cinema Specialists are back, and we are talking about Dune Part 2, the most popular movie in the world right now. Is it a science fiction masterpiece, or is it overrated? Can't wait to dive into this one. We've been looking forward to this movie for quite a while. If you checked out our Marvel film series, we were talking about Dune Part 2 coming out and saving the day, because 2024 has been a really rough year for movies. And towards the end of our Marvel film series, we really struggled to figure out a movie to pair with our Marvel movies. So excited to talk about Dune 2. I'm calling this March Movie Madness because I feel like that's a fun little catchy title. And since John and I are starting with Dune Part 2 and we've moved out of the Marvel thing this month, we're kind of doing just four random podcasts. It's going to be a lot of fun. Dune Part 2 starting it off. An Adam Sandler bracket next week. Stick around till the end of the episode and we'll reveal what episode, what movies we're doing. And then the Letterboxd most popular 16 movies bracket. And then we are going to be doing a 90s sports nostalgias bracket at the end. But we have to start off with Dune Part 2. John, I'm going to let you answer the question I have posed because I know that you have an answer. And I know that it's the one that is not what everybody else is saying. So is it a science fiction masterpiece or is it overrated?
I think this movie is incredibly overrated. I was pretty disappointed with this when I went and saw it.
Why were you disappointed, John? It was slow. It was methodical. Some would call it boring. It looked nice. John, this was Columbus, but good. What did you not like about it?
Because it was... it wasn't methodical. It wasn't like it was slow, but it was rushed at the same time. It was, it honestly, it just felt really messy to me. It felt like everything that Villeneuve established in the first movie didn't transfer over to the creation of this movie. It felt like we didn't get enough time with these characters to fully understand the intricacies and these themes that this story is trying to explore. And instead, we got a series of plot points that just led to a conclusion.
Yeah, I personally... So with this movie, I now pose my question to the audience. And if you're in the audience and you want to leave your comment here in the chat, please do, because I think this is a very fair question. Because I think that, one, I think you're wrong. I do. I think that this is a very good movie. But I do think it's overrated. So now here's my question. Can a movie be both great and overrated? Because I feel like, you know, Citizen Kane feels like that to me, right? Where everybody says it's the greatest movie ever made, or that's, you know, what the general thought was. So therefore, if it's not the greatest movie ever made, then it must be overrated. So, but this is on a smaller scale. This is a brand new movie. Yeah. So can it be both a great movie, but also overrated? Because I feel like the issue with our society is every time something new comes out, it can't just be that it was really fucking good. It has to be, this is the greatest thing you're ever going to experience. I remember now I like too that the previews for the TV spots, whatever, they love to throw up, whatever some Joe Schmo on Twitter said, this is what it was like to see Star Wars in the 70s. They don't even have critics anymore because critics don't exist. Yeah. Like you and I at this point might as well be critics. We might as well go throw our stuff on Rotten Tomatoes and give our reviews because there are no critics anymore. So now it's just Joe Schmo says, this must have been what it was like to see Star Wars in theaters. Why can't this movie just be, and you don't agree with this, but this is a hypothetical for our listeners. Why can't this movie just be great? Why does it also have to be the greatest movie of all time? This is the science fiction movie that's going to define our generation. Because to me, this was a soft four. It would have been a hard 3.5, but it was a soft four. I was in between. Do I go 3.5? Do I go 4? Do I go 3.5? Do I go 4? Because I do feel that the story was a bit lackluster. Especially towards the second half of the second act, I felt like, okay, is anything going to happen or is this movie just going to end pretty soon? And then I remembered at the end of the David Lynch Dune, it just ended pretty soon. Like nothing happened. So maybe we ran into that problem of there's just not much story there to get out of, but we'll talk about that. But that was what I took away from this movie. It was very good. I gave it 4 stars, which means it's great. But it was closer to being 3.5 than it was to being, oh my God, this is going to end up in my top 500 movies that I've ever seen in my entire life. So that's what I have to say. I'll actually break down reasons for everything I just said, but I just wanted to get that out now before we continue moving forward with this.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And it's a fair question to pose, because I think like right now we're living in a society that likes extremes. We like living on one side of an extreme or another. Maybe not you and I personally, but society as a whole has gravitated to that. It's part of just the social media era that we live in, where instant gratification results in people making very hyperbolic statements about literally everything, because that's how you get clicks and you get attention. And that's how you get people, you know, engaging with your Twitter post where you're saying it's the best movie ever. I guarantee you there's probably someone who has a Twitter post out there that says it's the worst movie ever. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten a ton of engagement because of it. And whether or not they believe that, it doesn't matter, because we're living in an age where it just matters how many people see your opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And maybe the Cinema Specialist Twitter account needs more of us saying, worst piece of shit ever created, best movie of all time. I mean, we could sit here and we could talk in hyperbole, and you could say I hated this movie and I could say I loved this movie, but I think both of us came out of this movie feeling slightly disappointed, you seemingly mm-hmm. more very disappointed. But for me, it was more of a slight disappointment. I felt like this movie in the first hour, I sat there and I said, I am in confident hands. This movie knows where it wants to go. This is so incredibly professionally well made. I thought the worm scene was awesome. I thought the way that that was shot and filmed and how it was built up was absolutely incredible. And I just all of a sudden, though, I got to the end and I was like, in the last 45 minutes, I said, wait a second. There's really not, they have so much to wrap up. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like they're going to be able to do it in a satisfying way across the board. I felt like some of it was really good, but I felt like they didn't do it in a satisfying way across the board, which made me struggle with it a little bit. So I felt like the third act, while it makes sense, there's no doubt about the fact that it makes sense, I just don't know how satisfying the third act of Dune is.
And I think that's the big question we have to ask at this point. Is the story of Dune just overblown at this point? Like, did Frank Herbert actually write a science fiction masterpiece, as a lot of people have?
Wow, you're going to get some heat.
I know. I'm going to get so much heat for this. And to be fair, I haven't finished reading the second half of Dune, so I can't fully comment on the book. But this story isn't really interesting at the end of the day. The world Herbert created is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. This universe is incredible. There's so much detail in it. There's so much, like, all these little intricacies to it, which do make it fantastic in this, like, science fiction scope of everything. I'm asking personally, is the story of Paul Atreides interesting? Because in the end, it lacks significant character development that, like, is logically supported through actions and conversation and relationships, and it's just a white savior story.
John always has to go with the white savior aspect. Come on, John. Come on.
It is. And to be fair, like, we can't, this is a 60-year-old story. It's also
a movie, though. Like, they could have probably put anybody they wanted into these characters. I get what you're saying, because the Fremen are essentially like,
it's the indigenous, and that's what it comes down to. It's like the trope is the white savior trope. It's not commenting on the race of any of the characters or anything like that, or the actors playing the characters. It's the fact that we have a character shown as an intellectual coming from wealth who is coming here and liberating the indigenous culture of a planet. Like, that's what it is. Unfortunately, the term for that is a white savior story.
Yeah. As dubbed by the interweb. I mean, you know, you could call it anything.
I mean, as dubbed by, like,
you know what I call it, John?
Like, a long time ago.
I mean, but if you wanted to look at like what is actually what is Dune, it's the hero's journey. I mean, that is what
it is.
Dune
is trying to do. And that's the other thing is it is the hero's journey, and it's just in the end not a very satisfying hero.
That's I think the biggest problem. I think the biggest problem I had with this movie is, and again, I gave this 4 stars, but I do understand where you're coming from on this aspect because this is what was making me lean towards the 3.5, right? Like I was 3.5, 4, 3.5, 4. Really, it came down to I gave this 4 stars because the direction. The way it looks, I am so invested in this world. I think the world is absolutely incredible. Yep. I also know that you didn't say very positive things about him, but I think Javier Bardem is absolutely phenomenal in this movie.
No, I think Javier Bardem is like one of the high points of this film.
Yeah, like I think he's absolutely outstanding in this movie, and I think that his humor and everything is well timed. Austin Butler is underused, but I wish that he would have been a little bit more. But ultimately, what my biggest problem is that Paul Atreides, I don't really know what makes Paul Atreides tick. I don't really know the deeper feelings of Paul Atreides. What is Paul Atreides going for that is making him want to do this? What is his, like, I understand that his father died in the first one and so he needs revenge or whatever, but what is it that makes him want to save these people so much? Also, the Harkonnen thing felt like it was thrown in so haphazardly and just so quickly. I felt like there needed to be more explanation into why he was like, when they do the Harkonnen reveal involving him and his mother, it's like, wait, why was that not elaborated on a bit more? I wish there was a little bit more to that. But yeah, I think the fact of the matter is Paul Atreides' story, and this happens a lot in these science fiction, massive, big budget, multi-planetary movies is the main character ends up being the least interesting character. And that's hard because Paul Atreides is really supposed to be our eyes into this very bizarre world that we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because he's filling this messiah role, it just feels so weird because we see him push against it for so long. And then all of a sudden he just embraces it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, you know what? It's been, we're 12 minutes in. If you haven't noticed, there are spoilers for this movie. But you know what? Again, this story is 60 years old. I think we're kind of like past the realm of spoilers when it comes to a story like this.
And the movie's been out for almost a week at this point. So if you're tuning into a Dune Part 2 review and you haven't seen the movie, go check it out. I mean, Patrick Stahl just said, I haven't seen this movie yet or most of the first one. My cousin who hated Part 1 loved Part 2. And that was surprising to me. I enjoyed this more than Part 1, but mainly just because at least this had an ending. Part 1 just doesn't, it's over.
I loved Part 1. I really enjoyed Part 1. I enjoyed every aspect of it. I enjoyed the time Villeneuve took to like world build in Part 1. And I was content with there not being a true conclusion because it was the first part of a series. And like, maybe that's me being too generous to it, especially now that I have seen Part 2. And I will be the first to admit, I need to watch this movie again to properly evaluate it. Now that I am not going in with expectations beyond what I thought it might be, this is going to sound like a terrible comparison, but I'm going to make it anyways. When I first saw Rise of Skywalker, the night it released, and was incredibly disappointed with how bad it was. And of course, like we all know, I love The Last
Jedi. Never saw Rise of Skywalker. That's how much I hated Last Jedi.
Yeah. But I love The Last Jedi, so I had huge expectations for Rise of Skywalker, how that trilogy was going to conclude. And I came out so disappointed because I thought it was the biggest piece of garbage I had ever seen. And like that is not how I feel about Dune 2, by the way. But I immediately told myself I have to go see this movie again right now in order to determine how I feel about it. And I went the next day and saw it again and confirmed it was a heaping pile of garbage. With this one, I kind of need it to sit a little longer because it's just a lot. It's a lot to take in. It's a long movie. But I know that I need that second viewing to properly evaluate it now that I don't have built up.
Yeah, it could be missed from expectations, right?
Literally everyone on the internet was saying this is the best movie of all time.
It has a 4.6 on Letterboxd right now. That's absurd.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's absurd. That's excessive, kids. That's too much.
To me, and I'm pretty sure I told you this, Phil, this feels like the type of movie people think they're supposed to like. So they're all saying they like it now. But in 6 months, people are going to be like, maybe I didn't like this movie as much as I thought I did.
Hang on. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. This is the 19th highest ranked movie on Letterboxd, but Planet Earth 2 is on there, and so is Breaking Bad, No Half Measures, Creating the Final Season. So take from that what you will. I'm just literally clicked highest rated on Letterboxd. It's the 19th highest rated thing on Letterboxd. I will say this. If you're watching the video, if you made it this far, please like the video. Please subscribe. Also, let us know if you liked this movie. What did you think of it? Yeah. Did you love this movie? Are you thinking that this is a masterpiece? Because what John is saying is not necessarily true. I mean, John is totally off the mark a lot. He thought Columbus was an all-time great movie, and I had to sit there and I had to watch that, and it's an hour and 40 minutes of my life I'll never get back. So John has had some duds in the past, and that's okay. We're all going to have some duds. I made him sit down and watch Crash and Shakespeare in Love, and he hated both of them. But the thing is with this one, I do think I agree with you on that. I almost feel the same way I feel with Oppenheimer and Barbie.
Yeah.
As I feel about this, although I do think this is the best out of the three. Now, you might not agree with that, but we can talk about that. But I almost feel like this is the same with Oppenheimer and Barbie, two movies that I enjoyed quite a bit. And Oppenheimer went up to the full 4 stars after I watched it the second time. Because for anybody who's just tuning in or just finding us or whatever, 4 stars is the highest I go on my ratings. It's the 4-star system. Anybody who does 5-star system, that's not what movies is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a 4-star system. And so the highest I'll go is 4. So I got Oppenheimer up to the 4. I gave Barbie 3. I like both of those movies. But at the same time, when we're coming out of that Barbenheimer weekend, it was, oh my God, those were the greatest movie-going experiences of my life. This is that. It's like, were they actually, or as you said earlier, is this to get those interactions on social media? Is this to get the clicks on TikTok and to get whatever and to rack up, oh man, I put out a Dune Part 2 review and it got 155 likes and 12 retweets. This was a big moment for me. Like, maybe that's what you wanted from it, and that's fine. But I do wonder how many people actually had this experience. And I think there's a lot of people who did. I think there's a lot of people who came out of this movie like, hell yes, I love you, Denis Villeneuve. I can't wait to move forward and watch part three, because there is going to be a part three. I don't know why all of a sudden there was like a thing of, is somebody put out an article, I forget who it was, but they were like, is Villeneuve trying to will a part three into existence? It's like, no, there's going to be
a part three. Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, Anya Taylor-Joy is going to be in one non-speaking part of the Dune series. Give me a break. Come on. Let's forget about that. So I just think that this movie, for as great as it was, in my opinion, as great as it was, it's still overrated. And it's a shame that we do that to movies so quickly. Because now when this comes out on streaming or whatever it's going to be, and you say to somebody who hasn't watched Dune, who maybe isn't a huge sci-fi person, oh my God, you got to watch Dune Part 2. It's like the greatest movie of all time. And they watch it. They're going to go, that was pretty good. Yeah, I liked it. But they're going to feel somewhat disappointed. And I don't know why, as a society, we've gotten to that point, right? I understand that you're always going to have the blurbs. I mean, even back during The Lord of the Rings, they were throwing in the blurbs and this and that. The most insane movie you'll ever see, you know, the greatest spectacle in cinema history, blah, blah, blah. That's great. You can say all that stuff. That's fine. But why is it that we always have to go to the extreme? Why does this have a 4.6 on Letterboxd right now? How does this have a 4.6 on Letterboxd right now? Like, I have to be a pain in the ass about that kind of stuff, and I know it's new. But this is a 4.6 ahead of like The Shawshank Redemption, The Godfather, Parasite, The Human Condition, City of God, Schindler's List, Akira, The Lord of the Rings movies, Lahane, Ran. I'm not even saying that those are necessarily the movies that should be up there. I'm just saying, holy shit, how are we doing this to this movie already? It just came out.
And it's especially really interesting when you consider the fact that the comparisons this movie is receiving at the moment, it's interesting when we look at other historical comparisons to it. A lot of people have compared this to The Empire Strikes Back. And I mean,
which I think is fair.
middle movie of a trilogy. Do you remember the last movie that was compared to The Empire Strikes Back?
No,
the middle movie of a trilogy?
Was it Two Towers?
It was Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
That's better than Empire Strikes Back.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is a phenomenal film, and I think it's better than this movie.
I think so for sure. I mean, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is one of the most underrated movies of the last 20 years. Like, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes 100%. Is an actual masterpiece. Yeah.
Yeah, I came out of that movie and was floored, and I understood the comparisons to Empire Strikes Back. This, I'm not getting it. And But maybe it is more. This one is more comparable to Empire Strikes Back because it kind of lacks some of that character development because it's focusing on this hero's journey instead. Because I'm just so disappointed in Paul's character in this movie. Mm-hmm. And the journey we see him go through, because he is a character who should be struggling with this messiah aspect of his life. And he is, to an extent. But it's never like, no, I don't want to lead these people. I mean, yeah, he says, oh, they should lead themselves, blah, blah, blah. But like, a big plot point in this movie is, I can't go to the south because everyone's going to die if I do that.
Yeah. Now, do you think that Austin Butler's character is a worthy villain in this movie?
I'm glad you brought this up, because this is the other comparison that I've been seeing out there, and I think it's absurd. People have been comparing Austin Butler's performance in this and the character he does in this to Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, it's not even close.
It's not close whatsoever.
As they say in Pulp Fiction, that's not even the same fucking ballpark. That's not even the same fucking league.
No, no, not at all. It's not the same sport. Like, I really enjoyed Austin Butler in this movie. I think he's one of the strongest parts of this movie by far. Like you said, he's completely underutilized. You don't get to spend enough time with him. But remember, this is the same character that Sting played in David Lynch's Dune, right?
He's just in it as Sting.
Not there. Yeah. Like, it's a character that's just not really there. And it's unfortunate because he's supposed to be the foil to Paul. Mm-hmm. So why don't we spend more time building that up and showing how he's the opposite of Paul? Yes, he's not integrating himself with the Fremen or anything like that, but there needs to be that foil. And it's not like Denis Villeneuve was above making changes to Frank Herbert's story.
Mm-hmm.
Because he did. So if that's the case, why didn't you make changes to make it a better story? Because we all know Denis Villeneuve is capable of doing that.
Well, and that was my biggest problem with the third act was I sat there and I said, okay, Paul is my hero. Paul has now, you know, gone and riled up the troops and he's ready to roll and whatever. And then it's like, okay, and his villain is somebody who hasn't even been on screen with him yet, who he doesn't even know exists. And they haven't done anything. And they have that knife fight at the end, which is brilliantly choreographed, by the way.
Yeah, like, fantastic. Yeah.
Phenomenal. But
which I can't say about the other action sequences in this movie.
I actually really appreciated the action sequences because they just came and went. I thought that was so refreshing because it was just, hey, boom, boom, boom. Like when, what's his name dies, Dave Bautista. It was so matter of fact. And rather than drawing that out for 5 minutes to make it whatever, like they just did it so quickly. And I really appreciated that.
I did appreciate that. I appreciated like Villeneuve taking like his Sicario approach to some of these action sequences, but they were unclear at times because of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But again, it just came down to the story of it when they are now going to fight and they're going to battle.
Yeah.
The stakes felt like it was for everybody around them, not for them. And I knew it was life or death for them, but it didn't feel like it was all that. Like, I didn't care about the two of them finally meeting and fighting. You think about Darth Vader versus Luke Skywalker. You're like, hell yes, let's go. Like, let's do this. Lord of the Rings didn't really have a tangible villain in that capacity. But when you're getting that in, these types of movies need to have a very clear good versus evil. And there was a clear good versus evil, but I feel like with Austin Butler's character, it was very much told to me, not necessarily shown to me. A very nice guy over here, as someone who loved this movie, it's because I love the book Dune and was excited for the adaptation. The Letterboxd reviews will go down as people who didn't need to see it right away see it. That is a very good point. I mean, that is true. I rushed over. I went and saw it 3:30 p.m. on Thursday. I mean, it was great. I just ran right out to the theater. Me and my wife were the only two people in the theater, so I didn't have a shitty movie going experience like Oppenheimer. And it was great. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I ate a lot of Kit Kats. I paid for it the next day, but it was fine. So anyway, but yeah, that's my biggest problem with this movie. And mm-hmm. and I think that, like you said, that was a thing that somehow Villeneuve needed to fix. He needed to find a way to make it so much more powerful when they finally fought each other at the end.
Because of like the grander scheme of this movie and the themes that it's approaching here. I mean, yes, as the Messiah thing, we're never really shown how the Bene Gesserit, like, you know, created all of this lore to build up this prophecy that they're using to control people. It's like, again, it's these themes that are hinted at in the movie, but are never delved into. There's this idea that the Harkonnens are bad. We've been told that the entire time, but we also know they're just a family within this empire that the emperor is manipulating in order to achieve his own goals.
Exactly.
We're not shown that. It's not built up that way. It's not built up in a way where we can decide as an audience whether we want to be on Team Atreides or Team Harkonnen.
And like, yeah, and I mean, you're told to be on Team Atreides. That's why we're on Team Atreides. Yeah. And Team Harkonnen is terrifying looking, even though, oh my God, the visuals on that planet.
So good. So
on so good. Dude. The like, fireworks.
And I can't deny that. I can't deny.
Oh, wow.
I cannot deny how amazing this movie looks.
Damn, that scene, man, when they were showing that and the fireworks are going off with the black on white and the muted explosions and stuff was just absolutely stunning.
Yeah, it was. But like, I want more. I just want more depth. I know we've talked about the fact that we're living in a society that deals with extremes. In my media, I don't want extremes. I want grays. I want ambiguity so that I can decide as a human being observing things who I am rooting for. And that leads me into my next point. Christopher Walken is one of the worst castings in a movie ever as the emperor in this movie.
You see that, John, at the bottom? I already had it ready to go. For anybody who's just listening and not watching, I have a ticker at the bottom that says Christopher Walken may be one of the worst casting decisions in a major blockbuster ever. I copy and pasted that from John's review so that when he did say this, I could throw it up there on him.
And it's nothing against Christopher Walken. I think he's a phenomenal actor. But when Christopher Walken is just Christopher Walken as the emperor, it took me completely out of the movie.
I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with that. I do agree with that. Christopher Walken and Florence Pugh both felt like throwaways, but then they weren't throwaways. And I feel like in the third movie, Florence Pugh will be much bigger in that movie. So we'll see what ends up happening with that. But yeah, I knew you were going to bring that up, and I don't have anything to say about it, to be honest. I just thought it'd be fun to throw up the ticker at the bottom, which is going right now over our Patreon thing. So if you want to become a patron, patreon.com/specialist, $5 Tuesdays, we're ripping through. We did Batman. We're doing Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid next week. Then Ghostbusters, then North by Northwest. Yeah. Batman released today. That was a good discussion. It was 1989 version. So if you're into that, you want to do $5 a month, John and I do at least four extra podcasts for you every month. You'd also, if you're a $10 patron, you get access to our Best Picture Breakdown, where we talk about every one of the Best Picture movies. So if you're looking for something to binge right before the Oscars on Sunday, you can jump in and you can do that as well. What final thoughts on this movie before we start talking about where we're going next, what we're doing next, and how the future of the cinema specialist looks into March and beyond?
I didn't hate this movie. I it was good. I am probably too low on my Letterboxd review.
But that's okay. Somebody needs to bring the rating down.
I know. And like, it felt like it was a movie that had to have this harsh reality put on it because of how much hype it's getting. The visuals are... Sorry, a very nice guy just said people are saying the visuals are better than Cameron's Avatar, and they absolutely are, 100%. Not even close. Well,
a very nice guy. If you're new to this channel, we are not Avatar fans at all, and I think Avatar, the 2009 one, has already aged so poorly and does not look good at all. And I've always felt that tall blue people walking around when you could have just made them humans, like, I just... the visuals in this are so much better, in my opinion.
Yeah. I and there are some great visuals that it starts with too, like the when the Harkonnens come down and they're like using the jump packs to like survey the land as they're looking for everyone. Beautiful opening. Like, I love the opening sequence of this movie. I loved a lot of this movie, but it was just like, when I look at it as a whole, it just, it left something to be desired for me.
Yeah.
And a lot of that comes to like the fact that Paul's character goes from wanting to like help the Fremen to revolutionize themselves to drinking worm poison and deciding that all of a sudden, no, you know what? I will be their Messiah. I am their Messiah. I rule everything. I needed more character development is what it comes down to. I just needed more from these characters. And you know what? We didn't even talk about Zendaya's character, who was arguably the most interesting character in the entire movie.
Yeah, I liked Zendaya a lot. I know we didn't talk about her at all. Her and Rebecca Ferguson, I thought, were both phenomenal in this movie.
I just felt Rebecca Ferguson didn't get enough. Because, like, she didn't get enough. You know what I really want to see? I want to see Rebecca Ferguson actually corrupting the minds of these people and building up Paul as the Messiah. Like, it felt like this movie skipped every interesting thing it had to say.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree with you about Rebecca Ferguson. I feel like that was a missed opportunity. I like Zendaya's character, obviously much better Chani than whatever the hell was in the Lynch movie. Yeah. But I really did. I thought Rebecca Ferguson, I think Rebecca Ferguson's going to, her name's going might stick around for a supporting actress nomination come Oscar time. This movie's going to stay in the conversation. Might not get a best picture nomination, but it's going to stay in the conversation because of all the visuals and stuff. And I could see Rebecca Ferguson sneaking in potentially because she is very good, even though it's a smaller role. Yeah, for me, my final thoughts on Dune Part 2, I thought it was a great movie. I thought it could have been better. There are some things that I would change, but I also think that when you're dealing with such a massive scale and such a huge movie, there's only so much you can do. And I'm not going to sit here and I don't want to nitpick it or anything like that. I'm going to sit here and say, oh, it's 3.5 stars because they could have spent more time with Rebecca Ferguson or this. I enjoyed it. I really, really thought it was a good watch. Jordan Alford just said, I thought Dune was good, but the last 45 minutes fell flat. Hey, that's kind of where I feel with it, but I was able to kind of overcome that. And I said 3.5. And I was talking to my wife about it on the way home. And I said, you know what? It's a 4-star movie. Like, I really enjoyed that. I will watch that again in theaters. If somebody asks me to, I will watch it again when it comes out on Max. I'm ready to go. I was into it. And I appreciate the scale, man. The visuals are just absolutely stunning. And I'm somebody who always goes story over visuals, but it kept me so intrigued for the first 2 hours that I can't complain enough to drop it down 0.5 star. So I am a little disappointed, but I think it's a great movie. It's just not the all-timer that I wanted it to be.
I think it's the 5-hour movie that we have to be looking at now.
Yeah.
That is part one into part two, because it both kind of feel a little incomplete by themselves. And I think like this is when you sit down and watch Lord of the Rings extended all in one day, right? Like that. Yeah. I think that's how these Dune movies are going to end up being watched from now on. So I'm interested to actually sit down when I decide I have 5 hours to watch both of these movies back to back.
Yeah. And when part three comes out, I will sit down and watch all three of them, because I do feel like once this is a complete story, this is going to be a complete story. And I feel like they're going to wrap it up at three, which Frank Herbert never did. And that will be good.
Yep.
All right. So that's the beginning of our March movie madness. So we're going to do 3 brackets the rest of the month. And I'm going to give you the movies that we're doing so that you can keep up. So next week we are doing what is the ultimate Adam Sandler movie? Not the best, not the funniest, not the worst, the ultimate Adam Sandler movie. What is it? And the 12 that we decided to pick between were Uncut Gems, Punch Drunk Love, 50 First Dates, Click, Grown Ups, Hotel Transylvania, Happy Gilmore, Billy Madison, The Wedding Singer, Big Daddy, The Waterboy, and Funny People. Those are going to be put into a bracket ranked 1 through 12 based off of their popularity over on Letterboxd. So that is how we are going to determine for all of these. We're just going to go based on how their popularity goes, except for the second bracket we're going to do, which is going to come out the week of the 18th. Probably on that Monday night. I think we're going to go back to trying to do Monday nights as long as John is good with that. I'd rather do this. So Adam Sandler would be looking like the 11th. And then on the 18th, we'd be doing the 16 most popular movies on Letterboxd, which, yes, we will actually end up doing by popularity. I thought about not doing it, but I think it needs to be done. So those movies will be Barbie, Parasite, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Fight Club, Interstellar, Joker, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Oppenheimer, La La Land, Pulp Fiction, Knives Out, Batman, Whiplash, Get Out, Midsommar, The Dark Knight, and Inception. Was Inception always there, John?
Inception 17 last time I checked? Inception 17.
The Dark
17,
Knight
right?
is the last one.
The
yeah,
Dark Knight's the last one. 16. By Batman, you mean the Batman, right?
Yes, I mean the Batman. Yes, yes, yes. That's the one with Robert Pattinson from 2022. And what that one's going to be is, again, we're not doing this as like what's the best. We're going to do this one as what movie actually should be the most popular movie on Letterboxd out of those 16. So that's how we're going to do that bracket of what actually does deserve the title of most popular movie out of those 16. And then we are getting into what is going to be the true cinema of all of us. So if you're a big cinema fan, this one is going to be for you. And I've lost my notes, John. I sent you the picture. Where the heck are my notes? I have so many damn things in front of me and I just throw them around and I chop them up and I can't find them. And then I don't do it.
Okay, but I have the picture. I have it here.
All right. John's going to read off. These are the 8 movies that we're going to do. And 4 of these were actually selected by our YouTube people. So if you haven't subscribed, subscribe. You can see when we put up fun things. But John, what are the 8 movies that we are doing for sports 90s nostalgia?
So our 4 auto lux were The Sandlot, Air Bud, Angels in the Outfield, and The Mighty Ducks. And then the 4 films selected by you, the listeners, are Cool Runnings, Space Jam, Little Giants, and something I can't read that film.
Rookie of the Year.
That one.
Rookie of the Year, 100%. That's definitely what that one is. Oh, you know what? I just found my notes. Perfect. Rookie of the Year. Look, I found my note. Anyway, so those are going to be our next 3 weeks. And then we're going to get into something totally different, and we're going to start doing a series called You Haven't Seen That. Now, we are starting to work on that, and I'm saying it wrong. It's really more of like, you haven't seen that? How have you not seen that? That's kind of how we want this approached, right? And we're going to be looking at some movies that either people talk a lot about and you just haven't gotten around to them yet. We're going to talk about some maybe hidden gems from some big directors. We're going to try to keep that relevant to movies that are coming out. So it's kind of based off of that, but we're still kind of fine tuning that, but that's what's going to be starting in April. So that's what's the future of the Cinema Specialist. I hope you enjoyed this episode all about Dune Part 2. John and I are going to get the hell out of here, except for John has his finger up. So I guess I'm not going to get that.
Well, because Phil, how can we also forget Thursday? We're doing our Oscar predictions.
Dude, I keep forgetting. Oh, my God.
I also keep forgetting, but we're not going to forget. Over.
Oh, my God. So that'll be at 7:30.
Yes. 7:30 Eastern on Thursday. We are talking Oscar predictions. It's going to be a fun year. I'm really excited for the Oscars this year. There is a lot of potential for upsets, and I'm excited. It'll be a fun show.
Yeah, I'm excited. All right, so that'll be Thursday night. Thank you all so much for listening. Think about becoming a patron, patreon.com/specialist, and we will see you on Thursday.